The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. All right, I want to get back to the New York Times story from Friday because, you know, we had discussed it yesterday, and you know, have a story come out, and then the left goes crazy and starts talking about, there it is, yep, there's the reason that he should be impeached, Trump collusion, the FBI started the investigation after he fired Mueller. But as you notice, there was no new evidence. Wall Street Journal pointed that out. Also, I want to play this audio cut here. This is from Ken Starr, who was on with Ken Starr, the special counsel for Clinton and the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. Right. And here he is talking about what one of the things that bothered him about the New York Times story. Here we go.
When I read the New York Times article, my first reaction was, we need an investigation right now as to who leaked this. We think we know. What was their motivation and why the timing? This was many months ago, and there's been no suggestion whatsoever to support this outrageous charge against the president.
It's pretty scary.
And the whole point is you know, that he had committed treason with the Russians. Well, that came out that the FBI did it. The FBI started the investigation, and therefore that proves it. At the end of the article, they said, well, the investigation has found nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And but this thing came out as if it gives it more credibility that McCabe ordered and the counterintelligence investigation against Trump. Well, based on what? And when you break it down as we have done, as we did on yesterday's show, all you do is get more evidence of the bias and prejudice, of the political bias and prejudice of the FBI against Donald Trump and for Hillary Clinton. Because then you ask those same questions. So you open up a counterintelligence investigation to see if Trump was committed in some type of treasonous act that you couldn't identify with the Russians. And the only evidence you had was the dossier, which the head of the FBI said was never, they never found credible from the very beginning. But you thought that that was important enough to open up a counterintelligence investigation against the president of the United States, which proved it was never about Carter Page and George Papadopoulos. All of that, as was pointed out by Andrew McCarthy, the news, when you break it down from the New York Times, means they were always after Trump. They only used Papadopoulos and Carter and Carter Page in order to get to Trump, to be able to monitor what they, in a fishing expedition, what, you know, could they catch Trump in doing anything wrong? And the point is, when you're talking about an investigative agency like the FBI, you say, but what was the evidence that you had? Well, we had no evidence of a crime, so we went after a counterintelligence investigation that he was a threat to national security. Hmm. Well, what gave you the proof that he was a threat towards national security? In that case, wouldn't you have run a counterintelligence investigation against Hillary Clinton for having the you know, early on for having the server in her own home that you believed, because Comey said it, they believed that our enemies got into it. They had to presume that our enemies got into it. Well, then don't you have to check the motivation about whether Hillary Clinton willingly was a threat to national security? When you looked at Obama, when you look at President Obama and the fact that he knowingly traded a American deserter who helped get Americans killed for five Al-Qaeda leaders. And then the Iran deal. where he lied about the Iran deal to the American people, where he told the American people, yeah, that, you know, we're taking all the precautions to make sure that they follow the rules and regulations. And that was an absolute lie. That was the American people in the poll after he had done that deal believed that the president of the United States, because of that specific behavior of that deal, made the United States less safe. Was there a counterintelligence investigation started by the FBI on that one? You can even, here's the point, in all of those cases, you can name the specific behavior that might hold somebody suspicious. For Trump, they could never do it.
No.
They still today can't tell you what behavior led them to it. The only evidence they have is a dossier that came from Russia through Christopher Steele, who was paid by Hillary and the Democratic National Committee. This isn't rocket science to figure out.
The former director said they never put much credibility into.
Right. So why wasn't there an investigation on the dossier and a counterintelligence investigation on the Hillary campaign and the DNC?
Because it's all, everything was all about Trump.
As I have said,
find anything and everything
as,
you can.
As we have said over and over again, tell us where we've connected the dots wrong, please. No one ever has been able to tell us where we've connected the dots wrong. The New York Times came out with this story, and if you break it down, it makes the FBI look worse. It doesn't help the FBI or the Department of Justice.
Because at the end of it, they found nothing.
Well, as I've said, they had more evidence that John Brennan should have never been CIA director because he voted for a communist in 1980 for president of the United States.
Right.
They had more on Brennan.
He influenced an election trying to get a communist elected. It may
exactly
be just
right.
one vote, but that was the influence.
It's more. It's
based on the standard here.
Based on the standard of what they went after. Look, I'm not saying they should have had a counterintelligence investigation on Brennan. That's not my point. My point is that how do you justify one here? Well, what happened was you got angry because your boss got fired.
Yes.
And you're accountable to nobody. You're the bureaucrats. The bureaucrats thought they ran the place. That's what happened. That's why so many of them are in trouble. That's why Comey got fired. That's why McCabe is under investigation and got fired. That's why Peter Strzok got fired. They got fired because they thought that they weren't accountable to anybody except themselves.
Right.
And that's why you should be worried, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, the stench and the stink, same thing, I guess, that was in the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the intelligence agencies.
Well, and how it was used over and over again. Comey, how many times has said, talked about, and tweeted about maintaining the integrity of the agency? Are you kidding me?
Well, and that's why I said, look, go from the assumption, as just to be safe and to cover all bases, that both the Democrats and Republicans have lied about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that Trump has lied about everything about Russian collusion. You're a Democrat, you believe he's lied, and then on the other side, you believe that Hillary. Strzok lied, Comey lied, McKinnon, that they've all lied, that on both sides were complete and total liars. Just to be safe, do that. And then say, where's the evidence?
Right.
Where's the evidence? You can be suspicious or cynical about both sides, and what you look for is what is the evidence that they went by. And the New York Times, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, New York Times, nothing new here. Nothing new about Trump and Russia. Absolutely nothing new. The only thing that they as they pointed out, is what you found out is that the The FBI needs supervision.
Mm-hmm. Well, they first need, they need great leadership. They need someone who actually does care about the integrity of the agency.
Because, you know, you didn't have it there.
No.
You didn't have it there at all. Now, the interesting thing is, who did leak it?
No, I think that is a good question.
Did Comey leak it? Did McCabe leak it? Who leaked it?
Right.
Who in the FBI, do they believe it's somebody in the FBI who leaked it? Is that where Ken Starr is going? Mm. Ken Starr says, we think we know who did it. All right. Who would that be?
Right.
Somebody higher up in the FBI? Can you go that far and tell us that that might be the situation? I'd like to know that. I think a lot of the American public would. As they write here, the story told us nothing about the Trump-Russia relationship, though it did confirm that senior officials in the FBI were in need of adult supervision. Think about the implications of this just for 1 minute. Senior FBI officials decided to investigate Mr. Trump because the president had fired their boss, which the president has the constitutional authority to do. That ought to be shocking, not least to civil libertarians and Democrats, who profess to be horrified by the legacy of J. Edgar Hoover. This reinforces a view that the Comey FBI was a force answering to no one but its own righteousness. The same unconstrained impulses led to the mistakes and excesses regarding Hillary Clinton in 2016. This is the reason Mr. Comey deserved to be fired, though Mr. Trump should have done it on his first day as president, as we advised him to do. Mm. By the way, so do we on this show. But as they point out again, their last sentence, and we've said this before, the endless investigations are one more reason for Mr. Trump to declassify the Justice and FBI documents related to 2016 and put them on the public record. So when it came out, you know, and I was busy on Friday, so I just saw the headlines on it.
Right.
And the headlines were, we got Trump, we got Trump, we got Trump, we got Trump, we got Trump. That's what you saw on social media from the left.
Mm-hmm.
When you actually go through the article, you find out nothing is there. The only thing that you find out is that the FBI, when you break it down, the FBI acted inappropriately again. I don't know if that's what the New York Times expected to get out of that story, if that's why they released it, but that's what happened. You found out that the stink was even bigger inside the FBI. This did not indict Trump more in any way.
No, they didn't find anything.
FBI.
They didn't find anything. And they went on another witch hunt based on nothing.
Well, that's the point that it's at right now. You know, you and I talked about the hatred towards Trump,
mm-hmm.
where you get to the point where you're so angry. Jim Acosta last week, twice in two different reports,
mm-hmm.
made the case for the wall.
Yes.
Twice he made the case for the, in two separate reports, he made the case for the wall. He is so enraged with Trump. He is so competitive and bitter about Trump that he didn't even know that he was making the case for the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Same here. The New York Times and whoever else leaked this is so hateful of Trump, so bitter about Trump, that they put out an article that they think indicts Trump. And when you actually break it down, it indicts the FBI and the Department of Justice. It does the opposite. That's where we're actually at.
Well, and there's the, you know, we agree. We've been calling on the president to release that unclassified information. Whatever has been declassified to this point needs to be released to the American people. We're not children. End this. The president made the point that he would use it if he needed to politically. That tells us there's nothing in there damaging to him. Release it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Wintertime can be tough on trucks. Cold temperatures and other weather-related elements can cause excessive damage to your truck's electrical system, an essential part of the performance and maintenance of the vehicle. Remember, since you're using your lights for longer periods of time, your alternator is working overtime. Once your engine starts, the alternator takes control of the electrical system and supplies the demand. This makes it more important to test your alternator output, as well as your cables, connections, and more. Including an electrical system check in your preventive maintenance routine can help ensure this component of your truck is prepared to take on the rest of winter. Stop into a TA truck service and get your electrical system inspected today to help prevent future repairs.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's head to you. We go to Sabrina in Tennessee about the partial government shutdown. Sabrina, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm just curious as to how long we go before Congress doesn't get paid with this government shutdown. Pelosi has already said she's not going to bend as far as the wall is concerned. When does it start affecting our Congress members?
Never.
So they do come to the table.
Never.
Well, it won't, because they would have to write the law regarding the shutdown. You know, every time we have a shutdown, they go back and they will provide protections for other jobs, more and more jobs. So this is why it becomes now a partial shutdown. So you would have to get to the point, Sabrina, of them actually voting to say that they're going to cut their own pay or not take pay or furlough or whatever you want to do during that situation. That's never going to happen.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of suggestions that, well, this would solve it, and we keep responding,
yeah,
Congress would have to change it with the agreement of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. The problem is Congress.
Yep.
Congress would have to change,
right,
all of these laws. It's... again, everybody comes up with these ideas, and the other thing is, well, maybe here's how we could raise funds. And it's not about money.
No, none of this is about money.
Not about money, and they're not going to pass a law so they don't get paid permanently.
You know, California's willing to spend tens of billions of dollars on a train to nowhere. So for 25% of that, we could have a wall. You know, I mean, some of the estimates say that train to nowhere, that the high speed rail there in California could be in upwards the price tag of $98 billion. Not about money. The Democrats are not fiscally responsible individuals. There are plenty of them that will spend like there's no tomorrow on anything and everything unless Trump wants it.
Yeah, they have not in the last month become the fiscally conservative party.
I wonder if the president came out tomorrow and said, I also want $50 billion for low-income families. If he said it first and they had to respond in a spending bill. I mean, it's, you know, we've talked about things that he has talked about in the past, single payer. But really, I think there's a decent chance or a decent argument to be made that if he offered up Bernie's version of single payer on Capitol Hill, went to Capitol Hill and said, here, I want to do it exactly the way that Bernie Sanders wants to do it, that they would say no. This isn't about the wall. It's not about anything else. It's about Trump.
Right.
They're not going to cooperate. We asked the question, okay, if they open the government now, what about here in September? They start dealing with a new budget. What's going to be in that? Video.
Listen to Red Eye Radio on your Amazon Echo every day, anytime. Say, Alexa, enable the Red Eye Radio skill. Then, anytime you want to listen, say, Alexa, open Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. In other news out there, I found this really interesting. New York Times article. Students in rural America ask, what is a university without a history major? So I saw that and I went, what is this about?
Hmm.
And they talk about the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, that they're having money problems. And some longstanding liberal arts degree, including history, French, and German, would be eliminated. Why? To remain solvent and relevant. They need to reinvent themselves. Tenured faculty members could lose their jobs. The University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, Dr. Patterson explained in a memo, could no longer be all things to all people. Dr. Patterson's plan came as Stevens Point and many other public universities in rural America face a crisis. Such colleges have served as anchors for their regions, educating generations of residents. Now student enrollment has plummeted, money from states has dropped, and demographic trends promise even worse days ahead. Universities like Stevens Point are experiencing the opposite of what is happening in some of the nation's most selective school, Harvard, Northwestern, and the University of California, Berkeley, where floods of applications have led to overwhelming numbers of rejected students. But critics say that in trying to carve out a sustainable path for Stevens Point and build a model for other struggling regionally focused universities, administrators are risking the very essence of the four-year college experience. Part of the fear is this an attempt to really kind of radically change the identity of this institution, said a political science professor who wondered aloud whether Stevens Point would become a pre-professional, more polytechnic type of university. Kim Muller, a senior who hopes to become a history teacher at a Wisconsin high school, said her first reaction to the proposal was, what is a university without a history major? A university that, for the survival of it, has had to target what students now in this new generation actually need in order to get a job.
Yeah, sure.
If other universities wish to have a wide curriculum on areas where there are no jobs, they can do that.
Well, the marketplace is ever changing, especially when it comes to higher education. Right now, it is about the skill set and not about the degree itself. It is about those who, if they do have a degree, that it applies in the marketplace. A business degree is one of those, you know, degrees that you can apply pretty much across the board. You look at the some of the advanced degrees out there, and then you get into the technical things like engineering or, you know, pharmaceuticals or whatever it might be, or then even further than that, you know, nurses and nurse practitioners and doctors and all of those. But it's about what the demand in the marketplace is for those roles, those jobs.
And when you look over the last couple of years at what the four-year degrees, what degree pays the most out of college, 2 years out of college, I believe that 9 out of the top 10 were engineering.
Right.
When that is the case, that is going to have a huge effect on universities and where people choose to go. When the state funding starts decreasing, why? Because now states around the country wish to take care of everyone, including illegal immigrants,
mm-hmm.
with health care and welfare and every type of other program. Well, then you're going to start cutting into colleges. And what you have the administrators look and say, sorry, that's a luxury. We need to load this college up with people that wish to come here and pay money because we provide them a service that they want, which is an education that will get them the best pay, because that's what students are looking for now. That's what the free market is looking for. The free market is not looking as much now as they were 10, 15, 20 years ago for an art degree, a French degree, a German degree, a history degree. Mm-hmm. They're just not. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of the marketplace. And because colleges have become so expensive, you have had to have young people and their parents make the choice. And they say one thing. You and I have talked about this for years. We started about 5 years talking about, you know, when was there going to be a change? And we've seen over the last 5 years that change. Maybe it's the last 3 or 4 years mm-hmm. that we've talked about. We said, look, they got to change. Eventually, they're going to start losing enrollment because you're going to have parents and the young people look at the return on investment. You know, the mentality from a couple of years ago from the Occupy Wall Street, which was, doggone those banks. Hmm. Well, the banks aren't the one that promised you a job after you graduated from college. That was the college who did that. You don't blame the bank. They lended you the money. The bank isn't at fault, because that's what they were talking about. The college promised us something and they didn't deliver. Therefore, we shouldn't owe the bank. No, it doesn't work that way. The bank wasn't a party to that agreement that you made with the college. And we said, look, that's not going to go anywhere. And what they wanted was all of their loans, you know, to be forgiven. Well, there's only so far that that went with the Obama administration, and it's only going to go so far in the Trump administration. And eventually people are going to get down to what is the return on investment. That's a free market sound at every time. What's the return on the investment?
Well,
am I getting?
And I think, too, you know, it became a generational thing. You know, from our generation, you know, a manufacturing job was a great job. That was something where you went and you worked for one place for a long, long time. And that was our culture. I mean, that was it. Man, if after graduation, I can get on here, whatever the factory might be. And in my small town where I graduated high school, there were a number of them. And those were the good jobs. You know, you saw the older kids who graduated 3 or 4 years, 5 years ahead of you. And they were working at those jobs and they were driving the cool cars and the whole thing, right? So that's where I want to go. Then it became, as those jobs moved, then it became something different. Okay, now it's going to be about the degree. It's going to be about college. It's going to be about anything but hands-on. And now it's about where are those high-paying jobs? And some of them might be hands-on even.
Mm-hmm.
But like within engineering, and you look at that and you realize, my gosh, the demand for those engineering minds is massive. And when it's massive, that means the paycheck is too. And it's something you can do for a long, long time. I mean, it's something that is one of those career fields, even if it's not for the same company, that you're going to be involved in for a while, if not for a lifetime.
Return on investment.
And that's what it comes.
What else can I say?
Yeah, and that's what it is. And it's also about, you know, and certainly those schools do come with a certain amount of, you know, credibility. But at the end of it all, the employer today wants to know that they've got the skill set. But that person coming in is going to be somebody that is going to be there for a while. Somebody I'm close to. The people that they recruit, the young people that they recruit, I mean, these are high earners. But there was a certain skill set that they were looking for, and they go to those schools, and they recruit them heavily. And they build, they create a lot of wealth for the company that they're with. And that's something that, again, you know, we talk about capitalism, that's the way it's going to work. That's the way it's always going to, I think, going forward, for a long, long time, going to be with education. And you may think you want to do this, and college is going to be a certain experience, but really the only experience that matters is what you have to offer to an employer.
A
I just love this, though. Mm. They had the New York Times had to throw this into the story. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Sometimes I liken this change to climate change.
No, here we go.
Said Greg Summers, a provost who helped come up with the plan to remake Stephen's Point. The higher ed climate has changed profoundly, and it's not going back to the old normal.
Yeah, right.
So there you go. But they had to throw climate change in there.
Sure. Well, it's very simple. It's, you know, what can you earn? What can you live on? What is it that you're actually going to want to do? You know, there was a period of years where there was this expectation that as soon as I graduate, people are just going to be calling me magically. And the jobs are just going to be waiting for me. Sorry, the world doesn't work that way. And, you know, it's funny because that's the marketplace also correcting itself. So you had parents and other students going, okay, wait a minute, what's going on here? Well, you had this glut on the market. I think the recession had a lot to do with it. But it was about, okay, where am I going to be viable? How do I build a career that may not be recession-proof, but certainly is recession-resistant? And where is that? What are people going to need?
And that
what's the marketplace going to need in any condition?
And Generation Z going into college is different than the millennial mindset.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This has been noted many times when they start doing the surveys. A lot of the people in college right now, think about it. During the downturn of 2008, 2009, 10 years ago, you know, they were 8, 9, 10 years old. At that point, and they went through what a lot of our parents went through in the recession. Mm-hmm. They lost their homes.
Right.
And they felt it. And we've talked about this before, that the mindset in the next generation coming up is different than the millennial generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, what are we? We're all creatures of the environment that we grew up in, are we not?
Right.
And you learn from the environment that you're in.
Right. And it's a very simple idea. What is the marketplace going to need?
Yeah.
Let me do that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye on the partial shutdown. The wall, whatever. We go to Tim in Nashville because it covers it quite a bit. Tim, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You know, I think it's pretty obvious that the mainstream media is pretty much bovine scatology. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're in the Democrats' corner, but... why is it that, you know, the Republicans, every time there's a microphone shoved in their face, that they can't just have some verbal judo and let the people know that the constituents of Pelosi and Schumer and all the Democrats or whoever's backing this, it's okay to, you know, kill and let the drugs come across the border and let disease just come running in. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I think, yeah. As I said, one of the problems that I believe the Republicans have is messaging. You've got to communicate a message. And the message is not just the wall. The message is the Democrats are for open borders. And it just frustrates the daylights out of me that Trump still hasn't figured this out yet. It's more than just the wall. It is the concept. It's labeling your other side for what they are. They believe in sanctuary cities. They're for open borders. Forget about whether we should have a fence or a wall or slats. That gets you into all the side arguments. And the real argument is they're for open borders. They're for illegal immigrants staying in this country. They're for protecting illegal immigrant criminals. over the safety and security of American citizens and, therefore, illegal immigrants voting. Every single day, the president should state that. Does he? No.
Well, and they're making the case, they're actually adding to it, where you don't have to do anything but point and point it out time and time again. New York, New York City. You know, the call for this kind of, free health care in New York City, but that kind of coverage and welfare in the state of California. They're handing you all of everything you need.
By the way,
every day.
Talk radio, conservative talk radio has figured it out. They know what it is. Mm-hmm. Why don't the politicians know? Doesn't matter what the mainstream media says. You've got to defend and attack. And the president and the Republicans, in my opinion, could do a heck of a lot better.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning. Well, you want a perfect example of media bias?
Sure.
Perfect example.
All right.
In the news. I like this. In the news today, media bias. Wait a minute. The news.
Wait a minute.
Well, oh, that's right. Because one time I was told in journalism school that news is the unusual.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Media bias doesn't fit that classification anymore, does it?
Right. That's like the story from the New York Times on Friday. There's no news there now that we know.
Well, we'll get to that here in just a moment. But this was CBS News, and here was the headline. Rand Paul to have surgery in Canada for injuries from neighbor assault. The senator who has condemned socialized health care will be treated in a country with socialized health care. Well, actually, he's not being treated in a country with socialized health care, because that gives the impression he is being treated with socialized health care.
And that's not true.
Instead of the fact that it's a country with socialized health care, yes, he has condemned socialized health care, but he's not going into the system. He's going to a private hospital that many people in the States who know of the hospital, Scholdeis up in Toronto, and I know about it because my father went there, and it has to be, I don't know, 40 years ago that my father went to Scholdeis. They do the non-mesh kind of hernia operation. My dad's never had a problem. Mm-hmm. It's unique. They consider it one of the best in the world. Mm-hmm. And he's paying cash. It's a private entity. It's got nothing to do with the Canadian healthcare system. Mm. Yet that's the impression that they give you.
Right.
In the article.
Because if he were treated here in the U.S., if he had the same procedure, he'd also be in a country that has socialized medicine.
You may have a point.
We have Medicaid. Mm-hmm. But they didn't write it that way. They wrote this particular article and wanted you to believe he's a hypocrite. Now,
right.
We have called him out.
We have called him.
On being a hypocrite, and it had to do with socialized medicine.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But ours was legit.
Well, we looked at the facts of the case, and when he was pretending, and we thought, well, why is he pretending to stick up for the blue states here? Then, his state also would lose some of that federal money on Medicaid.
And this is when they were doing the whole Obamacare thing.
Right.
And this was on the whole the budget about Medicaid and all that, and pulling and not funding it or having, what was it, the block grants instead.
Right.
Wasn't that the case?
Yep.
And he was stating that how unfair that would be to
places like California, whatever. And we're like, why is he so defensive of this? And then we found out that his own state, Kentucky, has it. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, everybody's a hypocrite when it comes to the money that their own state gets.
Right.
Yep. And we called him out on it that time. But that wasn't media bias. It was just analyzing his previous statements.
Mm-hmm.
This is media bias because it wasn't true.
Right. There's nothing wrong if you're going to call him out on something and, you know, there's actually something there.
Yeah, because one of the problems is the Canadian healthcare system in all likelihood is not going to accept an American patient that's charged to the Canadian healthcare system.
No. They make you work for 2 years to get that. I actually don't know what the qualifications are. I don't know how long you before you get healthcare.
In other news out there, well, with the shutdown, there's nothing.
Yeah, there's nothing else really going on.
I mean, they
Burgers and fries at the White House yesterday for the Clemson Tigers.
Right, that was,
you know,
that's true.
Which was actually pretty cool. I thought the president paid for it himself, and noted that the White House chef or chefs are on furlough right now, so. He reached into his own pocket and spent as little as he possibly could.
And I started reading
99-cent meals.
I started reading this story yesterday about the bipartisan group of senators that were getting together in order to find a solution. Oh, we got nothing.
Yeah.
Man, we have nothing. We can't agree.
There's nothing.
We can't even take step one forward. So, but it started out with this, you know, this great introduction. A bipartisan group of senators that are out to solve the problem of the shutdown met, but they had nothing and it went nowhere.
And it will likely go nowhere. You know, the AP story that said that the president is reaching out to rank and file Democrats as well as freshman Democrats in the House. And I thought, why would you reach out to the freshman Democrats? They're really not. It's specifically the ones that did not support at first Nancy becoming speaker again. But it's not going to do anything. You're not appealing to them. Rank and file Democrats, that's one thing. I still think the appeal should be those people in the middle. But the broader appeal, the American people. Look, he wins on the issue. Border control, border safety, that's something that he wins on. The American people, by and large, agree with him.
Well, we saw the poll, which saw a significant shift over the last year. Now, whether it's been over the last couple of months, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But more Americans now want a wall, especially independents. It's up 11% from a year ago, which is why we said they should have been selling this point 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They should have been in a mass marketing. They should have come up with a mass marketing plan. They should have held town hall meetings along the border. They should have talked about sanctuary cities. They should have talked about the concept of illegal immigrants voting. They should have nailed Democrats to the political wall, back them into a corner, and tell America, dare them to call, as we have said, dare to call me a liar. Democrats are for open borders. How do I know? They're for sanctuary cities. They believe if you cross, you should be able to stay. That's what the party is promoting. They also believe Stacey Abrams, a former gubernatorial candidate in Georgia, just stated the other day she agrees the fact that illegal immigrants should be able to vote in local elections.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they are affected by what happens in those localities. Well, then, and the question wasn't asked, well, then why not federal elections?
Right.
Because they're certainly affected by what happens on the federal level, but you have right now, you cannot say that you're not for open borders when you have, in the state of California, they are promoting health care for illegal immigrants. In the state of New York, they are promoting health care benefits for illegal immigrants. All the major big cities of this country that are Democrat are sanctuary cities. California is now a sanctuary state. They believe if you cross the border, you should be able to stay. Will you tell me what a greater incentive is than
to make that statement to illegal immigrants and then at the same time say, you'll get benefits, you'll get health care, we'll do everything we can to protect you and make it that the federal government can't get you, and we're going to do everything possible to ensure that you can vote in local elections.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you're for open borders.
Yeah.
That's a pretty darn good argument. I haven't heard one Republican politician try to back a Democrat into the corner with those words that I just used now. Why not? Why doesn't the president say it every day? You've got to be aggressive because you can win the argument with the American people. You and I talked about how many Democrats you can convince of that. Because the Democrat rank and file, for the most part, half the Democrats do not agree with their party. They don't agree on sanctuary cities. They don't agree that illegal immigrants should get benefits and health care. They don't agree that illegal immigrants should be able to get voting rights. The Republican Party seems to pretend those things don't even exist. And they don't pound them each and every day as they should. Part of this frustration is a call we got before.
Well, the mainstream media.
Well, if you are going to do nothing, don't blame the mainstream media. They're a constant now. We know where they stand. We know where the Democrats stand. We know where the media stands. What do you do? Well, to fight it, we're not going to really make a coherent argument. A coherent and consistent argument. We're just going to keep saying, oh, poor us, the mainstream media and the Democrats are against us, and we are not going to articulate when we know that we have the argument to defeat theirs. We're just not going to be consistent and coherent on it on every single day. Well, that would be consistent. Mm-hmm. I'm being redundant. But I'm frustrated. That's why. I'm frustrated when I know for years you and I have talked about it. How we have the argument and we refuse to use it. And the Republicans refuse to use it a lot longer than the Trump administration. It's just 2 years. The Republicans haven't used it for the last 15 years.
Well, if the president is going to stick on something, it has to be this from here on. I don't know what the end game is on the government shutdown, though. I don't know where you go. I think the president can go probably a couple of more weeks. The question is, the effect on TSA, the effect on air traffic controllers, the effect on tax returns. The OMB tells us, no, those tax returns will be, those refunds will be processed. Until they're not. So at some point, it starts to affect everyday Americans more and more. We asked this morning if Drudge is trolling the president again with the picture of the long lines at the airports.
Yeah, and it says, and it's still up there, a shutdown turns nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Government paralyzed. And we said, when we read that, we said, okay, is he trolling the president again? And what response is he trying to get out of the president?
Right.
Out of this? I mean, you could tell last time what he was trying to do, and we had talked about that earlier. That, you know, a lot of people calling up and saying the president has stayed strong. The president hasn't always stayed strong on this. The administration was ready to buckle before Christmas. That's when Sarah Huckabee Sanders came out and said, we don't need the money from Congress. We can do it on our own.
Right.
We can get it from different agencies. We can get well, then do it. And they backed off on it. Why? They backed off on it because of Drudge, Ann Coulter, people like Mark Levin, Rush. And they came out blasting the president saying, you're caving.
Yeah.
And then the president, it took about over 48 hours, probably closer to 72 hours, and all of a sudden he came out all gangbusters. But the administration, the president was ready to crumble again on this. And it was the conservative media that forced the president to stand up. And people don't, we have selective memories of what the actual truth is, and it's important to understand that.
Well, and the debate isn't that tough. It doesn't have a lot of moving parts here.
Yeah, that's frustrating too, because it's not that hard.
You know, of all the debates, even if we got into the whole the comprehensive immigration reform, we're not even there. It's real simple. Remember the whole thing about when we go back years about, when we go back to McCain-Kennedy, right? It was, for a lot of us conservatives, no, demonstrate that you're going to make a real effort, that you're actually going to do something about securing the border first. Then we can talk about amnesty. Well, still not too many moving parts. That wasn't that difficult to understand for most people. Well, this is far from that.
Yeah, it's a good point.
There really are no qualifiers here. And the insanity is, and the reality is that the Democrats are not going to hand the president the money. They're not going to give him a dime for the wall. Now, you know, the last 2 years is gone. You're never going to get that back. And the question is, what's your end game now? Where do you go with this? Because he suggested yesterday, he's not going to use executive power in any way. And he says, you know, he's not going to end the shutdown anytime soon.
But then you ask the question, why did you bring that up then?
Well, and it's likely because it was asked, but why did you start, he brought it up in that setting, likely because it was asked, but why did Sarah Huckabee Sanders come out and say we're going to find it through other means?
Right.
Because they were scrambling for an out. And at some point, you're going to need that exit ramp.
Well, did it mean that before Christmas, they knew that the Democrats wouldn't budge?
Oh, yeah.
Just the emotional response of the president because of the conservative media pressure where he said, okay, we've got to stand by this because I can't win in the media. My media, my conservative media will abandon me if I don't go forward with this. Was that the realization that there is no game plan? He just knows at this moment he can't back off?
Right.
Is that what it is?
You keep on it until you find an exit ramp. But I don't know what that is.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue says America seems divided on so many levels these days.
I think our goal as public policymakers is to connect America rather than to divide America. And I know that's
Connect America by bringing high-speed broadband service to everybody in rural areas. In a brief ceremony at USDA, Perdue thanking Congress for the $600 million it gave USDA for a pilot project to demonstrate the best, most efficient ways to expand rural broadband service. Perdue said this Reconnect program will have communities submitting competitive broadband project ideas for possible USDA help.
There will be loan grant combinations and absolute grant combinations there for different types of efforts in our communities.
Now, there are many rules, regs, requirements, technical and financial for the projects. USDA plans workshops and webinars to help applicants with the process. For the latest information, go online to reconnect.usda.gov. Reconnect.usda.gov. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
He is Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I saw this story. We just want to throw this one in here.
Mm-hmm.
Even a little marijuana may change a teenager's brain, new study finds. Marijuana worse for teen brains than alcohol, the study finds.
Oh, wow.
At the age that we studied these kids, 14, they talked about that the sculpting process that makes the brain more... makes the brain and its connections more efficient, go through a process of thinning, which is bad for them. And they found that in 13-year-olds.
Wow.
Or 14-year-olds, and they believe it's actually worse than alcohol, what it does to the brain.
Wow. Disturbing that
yeah.
they're studying that at such a young age. Here's your forecast.
A very active weather week is taking shape in the west. A large closed low will usher in waves of Pacific moisture into California through the day today. Then for Wednesday into Thursday, it's another powerful system that'll plow into the west coast. Overall, heavy rain, mountain snow, gusty winds, rough surf, possible flooding, especially near the recent wildfire burn scars, we could see the likelihood of mudslides. That's all for the west. For the central part of the nation, things will remain primarily dry today, with the exception of the Chicagoland area. In and around northern Illinois, northern Indiana, we do have the chance for freezing rain today. Chicago will top out at near 35. For Boston, sunny, 35. New York City, 39 and clear. Atlanta, sunny and 50 with showers for Thursday. Dallas, 54. Rain later tonight. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
They wag their fingers, and occasionally their thumbs, too. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, sitting here trying to make heads or tails on the whole Stephen King, Representative Stephen King, statement. He said, and this was what he came out on Friday, he said, "Today the New York Times is suggesting I'm an advocate for white nationalism and white supremacy. I want to make one thing abundantly clear, I reject those labels and the evil ideology that they define. Further, I condemn anyone that supports this evil and bigoted ideology, which saw in its ultimate expression the systematic murder of 6 million innocent Jewish lives. It's true that, like the founding fathers, I'm an advocate for Western civilization's values, and that I profoundly believe that America is the greatest tangible expression of these ideals the world has ever seen. Under any fair and political definition, I'm simply a nationalist. America's values are expressed in our founding documents. They are attainable by everyone, and we take pride that people of all races, religions, and creeds from around the globe aspire to achieve them. I am dedicated to keeping America this way. This conviction does not make me a white nationalist or a white supremacist. Once again, I reject those labels and the ideology they define. As I told the New York Times, it's not about race. It's never been about race. One of the one of my most strongly held beliefs is that we are all created in God's image and that human life is sacred in all forms." Now, the problem is this was done in interview form. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This was done in interview form, and he came out with a statement then again on Monday to try to put it into context. He said, "One of my quotes in the New York Times story has been completely mischaracterized. Here is the context that I believe accurately reflects my statements. In a 56-minute interview, we discussed the changing use of language in political discourse. We discussed the worn-out label racist and my observation that other slanderous labels have been increasingly assigned to conservatives by the left who inject into our current political dialogue such terms as Nazi, fascist, white nationalist, white supremacist, and then comma slash Western civilization. How did that language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization just to watch Western civilization become a derogatory term in political discourse today?" And then that's the end of the quote there. Okay. And he says, "Clearly I was," and by the way, it's not clearly, if you put it, "clearly, I was only referencing Western civilization classes. No one ever sat in a class listening to the merits of white nationalism and white supremacy." And I see what he's saying. He's saying that his argument is that he was saying what the left uses. These are the terms the left uses to define the right.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he has the comma slash Western civilization, he is saying he's talking about Western civilization, not white supremacist, white nationalist. How did that language become offensive? He says he was referring just to the Western civilization and not the white supremacist, white nationalist, fascist, and Nazi. That those were the terms he is claiming the left was using. Problem is, you don't do an interview with the New York Times.
Yeah, I expect that to, you know, come back at you because that's, well, that's how they operate. And you don't bring up the, you don't try and get into the debate about the specifics, especially in that area.
And the whole thing is, if you're doing an interview, or if they had the transcript or the tape of it, it would be interesting to see.
I would love to see that.
You know, what the actual tape is, because he's now he has lost his, three committees? He's off three committees.
In fact, he won't be able to serve on a committee for 2 years.
Yep.
You had Mitt Romney calling on him to step down and the whole thing, and the question then became, will he actually resign? Will he leave office altogether?
Because if you take, let's put it this way, again, I can't read his mind. If you take his explanation and you look at the quotes that how he did it, if you look at the quote alone, the quote, the way that it is, in the actual article, it looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
When you first read it, it looks bad. You simply go, good God. After he explained it, you say, after the way he explained it and where he put the comma and the dash to separate Western civilization from the rest, well, you can make that as a solid point.
Wonder if there's a recording.
Because what he's saying is the left is calling conservatives Nazi, fascist, white nationalist, white supremacist. And then his point is he separated the Western civilization from that. He was saying Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? The other, he's trying to make the case that he was stating that those other terms are offensive. Western civilization in itself is not offensive.
Right.
That argument, you would have a ton of conservatives who would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
That Western civilization is not a white nationalist, is not a white supremacist, is not a Nazi, or it's not a fascist, what Western civilization has promoted. That's a solid point. If that's how he really meant it the first time. There are a ton of Republicans that don't believe him.
Yeah, that's my question. Why? Why has he had such a hard time defending himself here? I wonder if there is a recording. Because the more you defend yourself and then accuse the New York Times of mischaracterization, then the more likely they are to defend themselves. I don't know if they actually will or not.
Here's my point. Friday he came out with one explanation. Took him till apparently on Monday. So it was Monday he released a statement.
Mm-hmm.
But on, it was last Friday where he tweeted out what the New York, but he didn't explain himself in that one on Friday.
Right.
So then the thing you would be thinking of is, okay, if he's trying to get out of it, it took him 3 days to write something that
to come up with something
that
sort of makes sense, possibly.
Right. If you look at his explanation, you could sit there and go, okay, I could understand it, but you and I know that if somebody criticized us, we could answer immediately.
Well,
if someone said, you guys said that, no,
yeah,
here's what we meant and here's what we said, or you know, right at that particular point. The
right.
fact that he didn't do it Friday and Monday, is that why Republicans actually don't believe him?
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know the guy. I don't know anything, you know,
no.
About his statements. And I'm reading here, this is from the Gateway Pundit, a right-wing website that has said the accusations by the media were outrageous and simply incorrect. And it said, are Republicans, here it is here, I'm trying to get it here.
Well, here's what he has working, I guess, in his favor, if he indeed is innocent.
Has any of these Republicans called Rashida Tlaib to be censured for her vulgar and profane attacks on the president?
Hmm.
actually, I believe people should say exactly what they feel to say, and these institutions should do what they do, and people will make the decision. That's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. People will make the decisions on what they say.
Right.
Because here's the quote is, the quote does not have the dash and the comma like his has. The quote from, they took the quote from the New York Times, it says, white nationalists, white supremacists, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization? End of quote. And what he is stating is that if you look at it, the context originally where he was talking about those names being called by the left, he was separating Western civilization from all those labels that he was responding to the left and their accusation that conservatives are those. And he was trying to say, I promote Western civilization, not what they call us.
Right. A feasible defense, I guess, it's certain, or it is a reasonable, I guess, defense, if that's the way it was, if that's the actual context. And it would make sense. It also, what he has working for him is the history, most recent history, of the behavior by the media, and especially the New York Times.
Well, the Republican leadership didn't believe him.
There's my question. Why is it that he's not getting anyone to defend him within the party?
And like I said, the first question I have is, why did it take you 3 days to come up with that mm-hmm. explanation? Because mm-hmm. that's what I was looking for over the weekend. I went, well, what's the, if it was, you reject it, but what is your explanation? Did they take you out of context? What was the context that you had it in? Can you get a transcript? Can you get a tape of it?
Right.
Because that's what will exonerate you.
Because if he did qualify those other items and then separate them, you know, after making that statement saying, look, you know, this is this and that is that. And how did, you know, Western civilization, how did that become offensive? If he, as he is trying to do here in the statement on Monday, if that's on that transcript, even if it weren't printed, then it would, then there you have it. My question is he asking the New York Times to release a recording or transcript? Raw transcript?
That's what I would want. I would want the entire
I would have been out the first day, the first moment someone uttered this, I would have been in front of cameras saying, I'm calling on the New York Times to tell the truth here.
Here's another thing. If I'm going to do an interview with the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
I'm recording it myself.
Yes. Absolutely. Yep.
I've been through it. I was through it with Nightline,
mm-hmm.
where they interviewed me for 2.5 hours and then took four words,
mm-hmm.
a 2-second clip of four words, and took it completely out of context.
Mm-hmm.
I learned my lesson that day. Will never trust anybody in the media when they get a chance. If it's not live, I will never do it.
Right.
I will not do it. I don't trust any of them. I just won't do it. I have my stage. It may be overnights, but it's my stage, and nothing can be taken out of context.
Well, and that's, you know, that I did Dan Rather when he went to cable. Where's he at now? What's his show on?
He interviews rock stars on Axis TV.
That's where he is now. Right. Yeah.
By the way, that was his forte. He does a good job asking.
He should have done that sooner.
Love personal questions of rock stars.
They were doing this expose on the trucking industry, which is fine, but you know, they were asking me my experience, and my experience has been positive. Not that everything is, you know, sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. But they were asking me specific things about, do you think it's possible, for this to happen or that to happen? And I didn't give them an out. And, of course, they didn't use anything that I said. They didn't use any of the 45-minute-plus interview. Nothing. Because they were looking for people to, you know, be disgruntled. Well, I'm sure they found them somewhere. But I wasn't going to be that. Same thing happened with a Kansas City newspaper one time. And then when they called me up to do a follow-up, it was the piece that they were writing was something originally that they told me was something very different. Well, There's one way to control that, especially if you're a lawmaker. Expect to get interviewed, but then you mind your P's and Q's, but beyond that, you cover your bases by recording those interviews
right.
yourself.
You record them yourself.
Yep. Something's missing from this equation with Steve King.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The Detroit powertrain offers efficiency through innovation. Detroit's Brad Williamson has all the details.
A lot of the people in the industry have been doing downspeeding for a while. This is really our first entry into that arena, if you will. So we've combined a DD15 mm-hmm. with a DT12 automated transmission and a 6x2 axle. And you can also get a 6x4, but really it's a complete powertrain. All three pieces, including the front axle, obviously, all four pieces are from Detroit. And it also has something in the transmission called intelligent powertrain management. It's a better step towards predictive technology. So it looks a mile in front of you when you're driving. It knows the territory and the terrain you're going to come up on, and it manages the engine and the transmission the most optimally as that it can when you're in cruise control.
For more on the Detroit powertrain, log on to demanddetroit.com. For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Lines open for your calls. 866 90 Red Eye on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, that's one interesting thing. Very quickly, you and I ask, what is the end game? You know, what is the Trump administration thinking the end game is going to be on all of this? Nothing is leaked.
Right.
Nothing is leaked about advisors say that this is what the president plans to do. We have no idea.
I don't know that he has an end game, and I think right now they're looking at it going, okay, you probably got this window right now, at least up until maybe February 1st. I mean, I don't know if that's the date they're talking about, but they're looking at it going, okay, we're safe up to this point, and then things are going to start falling out, and we have to monitor those things. TSA, air traffic control, people's refunds on their taxes, and more.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.